Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Thank you so much for downloading and listening. As always, I'm your host, Neil Horowitz. You can get more information on the podcast and see previous episodes and more content at dsmsports.net. And, of course, you can follow me on Twitter at njh287. Really enjoyed this episode. I think you're going to enjoy it as well. I was able to speak with someone who I've respected for a long time. His name is Ryan Frankson. He is the director of social media for the Oilers Entertainment Group, running primarily the NHL club, the Edmonton Oilers. He offers just some great insights, some fun stories, and I think you're really going to learn a lot from my conversation with Ryan, which is coming right up. But first, this episode's helpful tool. This episode's helpful tool is a neat little app that helps you create some pretty dynamic, pretty interesting videos in a matter of moments, especially with, you know, being able to upload creative videos to Instagram and to a lesser degree Snapchat and Twitter and Facebook. Being able to create videos on the fly, stitching together quick clips here or there, stitching together clips with photos, adding in text, adding in transitions, being able to personalize a soundtrack. Really, this helpful tool today is going to help you do all that, and it's called Quik. It's a free app that I've tried out on iOS a couple times now, and you can stitch together any photos, any videos. You can take photos and videos in live time. You can rearrange them for a certain order. You can set music so that it will automatically play at a certain beat. You can select from any number of their free soundtracks, which they have quite a few, and also different themes in terms of transitions and flow. You can also add any music from your own device. So if you have a certain song you want to use, or a soundtrack or background music, you can add that. You can, of course, touch up your photos and videos. You can add text to them. You can even focus and zoom on certain photos and videos to really, really create something pretty cool that you can instantly then, you know, upload to your Instagram story or to any other social platform, or save to your device and use later as well. So give it a shot. Play around with it. One of those tools that you may find helpful in the right moment. I think you will. I think you'll have some fun. So download it. It's called Quik, and it's this episode's helpful tool. Now we'll be right back to have a really good conversation that you're going to really learn a lot as I talk to Ryan Frankson in just a moment. All right, that was this episode's helpful tool, and now we are delighted to be joined by one of the best guys in hockey. I've been keeping in touch with him for a little while now. We are joined by Ryan Frankson. He is the director of social media for Oilers and the Oilers Entertainment Group. Welcome to the podcast, Ryan.
Thank you very much, Neil. It's long overdue, I think. We've been chatting for a long time, and I'm very stoked to finally be chatting with you here.
Most definitely. We're on the precipice of an exciting season for the Oilers, so lots to talk about, lots to be planning, I'm sure, as well. But before we get into the meat of the conversation, we have to get to know you a little bit and learn a little about your career path. So tell our listeners, you know, how you got started in the game, coming up through college and working your way up through the Oilers, and any tips along the way.
Yeah, definitely. Well, when I was in high school, I was kind of trying to figure out what I wanted to go to post-secondary for, and it was kind of always my back of my mind dream job to be like a baseball writer or a hockey writer and be able to travel around and cover the local team. I don't know what city I would have been living in at the time, but just some kind of cool job like that to get to travel around and cover baseball or hockey or whatever it might be. So I decided to go into journalism here in Edmonton. And so I went to a school called Grant McEwen University. It's a local university in Edmonton, and took journalism there. And that kind of segued into a sports writing career. I did an internship with the big daily in Edmonton, the Edmonton Sun. And then I worked at a couple of community papers as their sports editor for about four and a half years. And then over that time, I kind of got more interested in the communications PR side of it. Mm-hmm. Definitely still wanted to stay involved in sports, and really kind of figured I wanted to target getting involved with Oilers. Wasn't called Oilers Entertainment Group at the time, but still a big company that was growing. And so I applied to be the communications manager for the junior hockey team that we own, the Edmonton Oil Kings, there in the WHL. Mm-hmm. We won the Memorial Cup a couple years ago. Really good franchise. And I ended up getting that job. And we actually had a baseball team, an independent league team at the time. And so I was the communications guy for both of those teams for one full year. And yeah, that was kind of right around the time that social media started becoming quite a big deal. Like Twitter was becoming huge, especially for brands and sports teams. So I was able to create the profiles for the two teams that I was managing at the time. So that was really cool to be kind of on the ground floor there. And then the following summer, so we're into 2011 now.
Okay.
We had a really great forward-thinking chief marketing officer at the time who kind of saw this digital revolution that was going on and invested a lot of resources and really kind of swayed the company to buy into it and created a bunch of new digital jobs, kind of like a whole new digital department.
Wow.
And I was fortunate enough to get the social media manager job on the Oilers side at that time. So really lucky to be in that right place, right time, right skill set that I had built. And yeah, here we are now, 6 years, six hockey seasons going into this one, years later. And yeah, loving every minute of it. Director now. And yeah, there we are.
I mean, even coming up in the more, you know, PR journalistic role, did you see journalism changing rapidly even before you got into, you know, more social and digital stuff? Were you responsible more for quick hitting stories and, you know, quasi blog posts as opposed to, you know, feature articles and the type of stuff that we were more accustomed to, you know, 20 years ago?
Oh yeah, definitely. We had I'm from a suburb called Sherwood Park outside of Edmonton, and I was actually the editor and the sports editor at the time. And we had just started a Twitter account for the Sherwood Park News, and we were starting to put breaking news up on our website as opposed for people having to wait until it was a twice weekly publication. So either waiting for Tuesday or Friday to be able to read about it, we were putting stuff on the web. So I kind of saw that all happening in front of me. And really, my end goal a couple of years before that was to get to a big daily and pursue my dream as a daily sports writer. But I kind of saw that that window shrinking as everything got more digital and staffs were reducing. So I kind of shifted my focus towards maybe getting onto the communication side with a team or a company that was involved in sports and kind of getting into the flip side of it rather than the newspaper side.
And pretty cool to with the junior club and then with the Oilers as well, to basically start from scratch. I mean, to think that you were overseeing some social media accounts, Twitter and Facebook, when you had started out with zero followers. And now, you know, obviously the Oilers NHL club has a ton of followers. The Oil Kings as well have a ton of followers. And to think, you know, how much things have really evolved from then. So, I mean, when you first did start, getting into the social media waters, and what was the reason and the point for being there, and how has the strategy changed, in early on and obviously as you've grown in the last 5-6 years?
I think back 5-6 years ago was kind of about FOMO, really. We saw what was going on and knew that our teams needed to get on there. That's where people were talking about sports and having conversations with other sports fans. So we figured we better not miss out on that opportunity to engage with sports fans in our market and all around. But now it's a heck of a lot more strategic, obviously. We're breaking news on these channels, and we're channeling sponsorship revenue with partner campaigns, and just a lot more, very multifaceted, and a lot more uses for it now, and very, very much more strategic than just kind of doing it for the sake of doing it.
I mean, how much was the Oilers and the other clubs early on seen as a content producing machine as opposed to, you know, a glorified press release machine that would, you know, try to get as many stories written as they could in the national publications, you know, on the TSNs and with the Edmonton Sun? Was there a point in your career when it sort of the light bulb went off, whether it was for the organization or for yourself or both, where it was like, hey, if we create content, fans will come to us?
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what happened in that summer, spring 2011 phase there, where we greatly expanded our digital department. We hired an on-camera reporter. We added, because at the time I think there was just a website manager who also did written content, and then I think another staff writer and a video producer. And we went from, I think, 3 digital to probably 8 over that summer, with social people the on-air reporter, another video producer, another writer, and whatnot. And now we're up to, I believe there's 14 people in our digital now for OEG. Oh, wow. as a whole. Yeah.
And has it been incumbent on you to sort of lead the direction? I mean, when you became social media manager, no one really knew what the hell they were doing. I mean, including your bosses, I'm sure. It was new territory for everybody. How has that sort of affected the way that you've grown in your position and the way that you've really have you had to take that leadership role earlier on in your career because no one else really knew what to do with these platforms and how best to utilize them?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really interesting, good point about how social and digital is a lot different than more traditional departments for a sports organization, whether it's like traditional marketing, traditional PR. You're all kind of learning as a company with social and greater digital and web and mobile and whatnot. And so you really do have to be one, like you really have to do be the forerunner, the forefront person on, you have to be the expert in the company on those areas because your executive will kind of look to you for guidance there rather than maybe the other way around but for the more traditional methods. And it's kind of a matter of educating everyone else around you of what's going on while also kind of staying on the pulse of the industry and new platforms and emerging trends and all that good stuff.
And did you find early on that it was really receptive, or you know, did you have to be more proactive and walk in people's offices and say, here's what we're doing, and hey, you know, if you have a sales campaign, we should be tying it into our content, or hey, you're doing a CR appearance, how come we're not covering that on Facebook or on Twitter or later on Instagram? How much of that was you having to really, I don't want to say push the envelope, but really be more proactive as opposed to the club really embracing it and everyone coming to you as well?
I think we're pretty fortunate to have that really forward-thinking CMO at the time who had a really good vision for that, and he kind of circulated that throughout the kind of the marketing and sponsorship group. Whereas we started building that into our sponsorship packages right away. Social media campaign was part of, say, like a Molson Canadian beer sponsorship deal. Like they would have a social media campaign built into it, and we would work to execute.
You guys were ahead of the curve then.
I think so. I think we had like we just all kind of perfect storm of it. Social media exploding and us having a really good company alignment at the time and getting a lot of good people in place to execute it. It was just a lot of luck and a lot of like good timing, I think.
And obviously a good social media manager leading the way in yourself.
So it's always an adventure for sure.
As you've been able to really grow with the industry, and you know, I think you and I sort of came up at a similar time in the industry, and you know, when we first started, it was Facebook and Twitter, and that was pretty much it. And then Instagram, and then Pinterest, and Google Plus, and Snapchat, and of course the other ones that have come and gone along the way. So as these new platforms came up, and all of a sudden you needed more resources or you know more places to put content, how has that really been, I guess, executed at the organizational level? Was there a certain point where you're like, hey, we have a new platform to support, or hey, we need to, you know, be able to push out more content now. I can't do it all myself. And has that been a struggle over the years to really figure out where to put your resources and, you know, which platforms to adopt, or how's that process really played out in real life?
Definitely a challenge for sure. You look at something like a Pinterest, it was so hot for a good 6 months to a year there. And we definitely hopped on that bandwagon and set up a bunch of different boards and tried to see what ways we could integrate it into our world. And really, nothing didn't really pick up that much steam. We've axed it a couple, I think maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago now. Just really not really a fit for what we do. You look at something like back several years ago, it was the big two. It was Facebook and Twitter was the big two. And now I would call it the big three with Instagram, and then Snapchat is really like getting into that conversation too. And you talk about needing extra resources. I think Snapchat has been probably the biggest driver of that, to be honest, because I could probably manage those big three on my own on a game night, but probably wouldn't have time for Snapchat. Right. And now I'm quite blessed to have a social media coordinator working with me. So on a game night, I'd be live tweeting, I'd be tossing up the odd highlight on Facebook or a post on Instagram, and she'll be snapping the whole game and executing some other elements like contesting. So really, to have two people, definitely necessary especially for a game night execution or any kind of like a big press conference or something like that. Definitely really definitely required us to have more resources.
And yeah, it just blows the mind to think how far we've come, for sure. I did want to step back a little bit real quickly here. And, you know, looking back, the fact that you came from a PR background, you know, I'm sure certainly both helped and also, you know, affected the way that social really, I guess, grew into the Oilers organization. You know, I guess there's a couple of things, ways to look at that. One is, you know, having that PR mindset probably, you can speak to this as well as you can, gave you the understanding that when we are putting out a tweet, when we are putting out a Facebook post and infusing it with any sort of voice or tone or even the wording and the way things were worded and quotes that were put out, I guess early on, was it pretty apparent to you and your bosses, so to speak, that these were more than just, I guess, feeds, that they really were representative of the organization and every little tweet, you know, for lack of a better term, could be a mini press release?
Yeah, absolutely. I think having that, coming from a newspaper background and a PR kind of background, it allowed me to really integrate quickly with our hockey PR department, who obviously is the main driver of our hard news that we put out through social. So to have that kind of knowledge base, it gave them kind of a sense of comfort, knowing that I had that news mind and knew how to put news out on a social media platform, and I could really work well with them to announce trades, to just kind of execute big announcements and stuff like that. So that was really valuable. And just having, yeah, just that news sense, knowing what is important to say and how to say it at the right times, I think is a really valuable tool to have in your arsenal for kind of a social media content producer.
The words you use after a loss, or even a photo that you use that may show some empty seats here or there. I mean, those little things really, you have to have that intuition for it. And, you know, coming from the background you did, I'm sure, you know, gave you a little leg up early on with that. So I guess tell me, you know, where social and digital really fits into the Oilers Entertainment Group organization. Is there a whole digital group in and of itself? Do you guys fall under PR, under marketing? How's it all end up working together from an infrastructure perspective?
Yeah, it's interesting. We've kind of bounced back and forth over my time with the company. From, it definitely fell under marketing when we first created our larger digital group. And then we flipped over to the kind of the corporate communication side. And now we're back under marketing. But really, our digital group is so big that it's kind of a group onto its own as part of an even bigger marketing group, but very much like self-sufficient. Like our operating day-to-day and kind of our objectives and whatnot, that those really haven't changed depending on who we're filtering through. We've been kind of doing our thing and doing it well for so long that it's the priorities haven't changed depending on like where we're filtering through, but it has kind of bounced around a little bit, but it hasn't really affected the way we do things.
How do you guys assure that everyone is on the same page, that you guys are supporting the campaigns properly, that, you know, sponsor activation ideas are getting thrown out there, whether it's coming from you or from the sponsor team? Is it constant meetings? Is it a lot of emails? Is it a Slack community? How do you guys make sure that everyone is on the same page and there's no silos in the organization?
Yeah, from a digital department perspective, we definitely operate a lot like a newsroom. There's a lot of content meetings, for just the social group, just the writing group, just the video group, and then we all kind of come together, to compare notes and make sure we're syncing up on everything, and then kind of externally, just a lot of like casual FaceTime. We're very lucky now to all be under the same roof as opposed to being spread out across the city like we were the past few years. So lately, being in our new building, we've really reaped the benefits of all being together and being able to just go to and from each other's work areas and talk about various campaigns with our sponsorship department. And yeah, just weekly meetings, weekly rundowns of everything we've got on the go, making sure there's not a lot of overlap between our partner campaigns and all the different marketing priorities are aligned and given the proper love on social.
And that constant communication is just so key, and making sure that everyone is, you know, operating from the same playbook, so to speak. And speaking of that, I would like to ask just one quick, you know, high level question. I guess that is especially increasingly so in the last probably 2 or 3 or 4 years. You know, social really has been that place to establish that voice, that personality. You know, what the Oilers look like and sound like on social. How intentional is that? And is that primarily coming from you and what your instinct tells you about what's going on with Oilers PR and what the fans are saying? Or is it a really in-depth conversation with the VP of PR or marketing folks saying, this is who we want the Oilers to be on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, on Snapchat?
I think it's not so much the social voice coming from maybe higher up direction, but me kind of taking what we're saying about the brand and what kind of our attitude is for the upcoming season and trying to kind of mold the voice around that. Kind of like building up a little bit more swagger as we get a little bit more confident in our on ice product and just kind of knowing where to push and then where to ease off if we kind of aren't able to really back up the confidence on our digital brands with our on ice performance to kind of ease it back a bit and just kind of keeping your finger on the temperature of the situation. Mm-hmm. Just kind of being able to gauge how your fans are feeling about the team and like that.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. And certainly, while the Oilers, anyone that follows hockey knows the Oilers haven't won a ton on the ice in the last few years, but where you guys have won plenty has been in the draft lottery, coming up with a lot of big stars. From the recently departed Taylor Hall, Nail Yakupov, Jordan Eberle, obviously Connor McDavid, who everyone is labeling as the next greatest thing, was named captain recently. So I guess how does it affect what you guys are doing on social and on digital from a content perspective, from a PR perspective, when you guys do get these young star players that you want to really get fans excited about and really parade them in front of folks and working with hockey ops to make sure that that's okay to do that. It's okay to feature Connor McDavid or, feature an RNH, for example, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. So a long-winded question, but I just give me some perspective on how you guys really try to capitalize on these young stars coming in and also make sure that it's okay with your GM and your coach to put them out front and center.
Yeah, I mean, they're star players, so there's no secret that those are the players that your fans want to see the most about, to learn the most about, to see them in your videos, in your photos, on your Snapchat. So, and Connor's been a complete game changer for our organization in terms of kind of fan exposure and mm-hmm. just that the power of the Oilers brand with him attached to it. Like, our social media following catapulted the last summer after we drafted Connor, because we had so many different hockey fans who maybe weren't Oilers fans before, but they were following Connor and knew how excited everyone was about him, and so they were going to become fans of the team that he went to just because they were so interested in him. So we've had a lot of more eyes on our channels and our product because of Connor coming in. And yeah, I think it's just not trying to focus on him all the time, but definitely he's your captain, he's your star player. He's going to be a big part of your digital strategy, but all the players have their different quirks and qualities and different stories that you don't want to forget about them either. And because guys like a Matt Hendricks or a Pat Maroon, those character guys that Alberta is very much a blue collar province, oil and gas industry, lots of farming and whatnot. Those are the kind of guys that the general population in Alberta really can latch onto too. Those lunch bucket guys. So it's definitely fun to be able to feature them as well. Spread the love a bit. And yeah, but yeah, Connor's been such a blessing to have to showcase his skills and his just the excitement that he creates in the hockey world.
So I don't want to hark on Connor too long, but I'd be remiss if I didn't ask this. Take us a little inside hockey, inside baseball. Looking back at that draft when it was either looking like it was either going to be McDavid or Eichel, and then whoever got that lottery pick. And sorry to our friend Craig in Buffalo, although Jack Eichel's a pretty damn good player himself. What was it like when you were I guess watching the draft or at the draft and Connor or at the draft lottery rather, and you guys realized that Connor McDavid was about to fall on your lap? And what is that? How does that happen? Or I guess how does that affect your guys' digital newsroom and content team? Are you guys just you guys have a plan already in case you get Connor, or do you guys just start scrambling all together and saying, how can we capitalize on what we know is going to be a really big event for our franchise? I mean, take me inside that night and then the days leading up to the draft.
Yeah, absolutely. We all knew that we had a good chance to win the lottery that year, but I don't think anyone really truly believed that it was possible. So I think in the back of our minds, everyone kind of had a bit of a plan about, I definitely kind of knew, okay, what would you tweet? What would you post if somehow that we did win it? But I was sitting on my couch watching the lottery live, obviously, and I was completely by myself, no one else around me. And that golden card came up, and I think I completely, definitely took my breath away. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't believe that it was real life for a second there. But then obviously springing into action and posting all about it and celebrating that crazy chance of luck. And probably 20 minutes after that, we were on an all-digital conference call at, like, call it 8 o'clock at night on that Saturday, just going into, like, execution mode. What can we do? Definitely a major game changer. Like, I think we had a press conference either the next day or on Monday with, because we had our assistant GM at the time, Bill Scott, was there, and he had these lucky socks on that our CEO, Bob Nicholson, had given him. And so so many different stories to tell that were part of that night. And then it was funny that we didn't want to, obviously couldn't come out right with it and say that we were drafting Connor.
Right, so right.
The next, like, 3 or 4 weeks was just kind of like a tap dance of making sure that the other top prospects got their love too in our pre-draft coverage, but all the while knowing that he was our guy. So we definitely had a nice little runway to prep a lot of video content and to prep a really big draft party and all that great stuff for the few weeks leading up to the draft. But the night of the draft lottery was definitely a shock and a really crazy, exciting night. So started a wild journey that's still going.
You gotta love that. And now, I mean, your room is really full of, I mean, there's some veterans here and there, of course, and you mentioned a few of them, but I mean, with such a young room, does that make your job easier, or at least, you know, a little better because you have guys who understand the value of social, that know what a Snapchat takeover can do for them, what it means if they do a quick little message to fans for an Instagram video or whatnot? And how does having that younger room really affect what you guys can and are able to do with social?
Absolutely. They're definitely more savvy with it and understand it. So when we have our media days where we get the guys coming through the various, like, photo stations, we can just grab a guy and, like, give them Snapchat and say, what's your favorite filter? Do something with your favorite filter. And they know what they're doing on there with the Snapchat filters, because they use it every day with talking to their friends and sending silly stuff to each other. So to be able to just kind of hand them the Oilers Snapchat for a few minutes, and they know exactly what they're doing. We don't have to kind of coach them through it or anything. That part's really fun. And yeah, they definitely get, like, most of them have their own brands and own accounts, and they get what it can do for them and how we can help them build their brand and vice versa. And just the power that it has to interact with fans one-on-one and just know that they can really make a difference in a fan's, like, feelings about them just by giving them a quick little reply or a thank you or a like or something like that. Mm-hmm. They get it.
How does that tend to affect also then the other side of the coin? If I guess, how does it affect when the team is not doing as well? Do you feel like, are those guys, are they sort of teaching themselves to not look at all their mentions after a tough game or after a penalty or whatnot that leads to a goal, or are they pretty open and actively trying to, you know, monitor their mentions, check what their fans are saying with them? Is that make your job, I guess, tough at times, or not your job tough at times, but just the way the players are interacting with fans for better and for worse?
Yeah, I think it varies per player. Like, some guys, that stuff doesn't get to them, so they're going to keep using their platforms the way they would always use them for checking the news around the league, news of other sports, and maybe going through their mentions. But I definitely, other guys who would maybe not respond well to that maybe negative feedback. I know they would probably not look at their mentions. It definitely varies guy to guy. And I think our hockey PR department does a good job of kind of helping them navigate through maybe some of the potential negative aspects of social. And I try to help out as much as I can too. So kind of varies from guy to guy.
That could certainly be important. And I guess speaking of your up and down mentions on social, up and down seasons, how has it been for you navigating a team that, whether you guys are out of the playoff hunt by March or whatever, or having to deal with the ups and downs of tough seasons here and there? And does it mean that you really have to pay attention to the tone you're taking, to the type of content you're putting out on social? And I guess what is your advice for someone that is leading social for a pro or minor college sports team that's not having the season they envision and making that run to the cup?
Yeah, I would say don't be like oblivious to it. You have to acknowledge that your fans are probably frustrated too.
Mm-hmm.
So having that kind of empathy and not posting like you have your heads in the sand and everything's roses and rainbows and butterflies and all that stuff. But definitely latching on to the individual highlights that could still be going on in a tough stretch. Celebrating the little victories as opposed to the kind of the grand scheme to keep. I mean, that's how we stay engaged with it too, is celebrating. Say a guy scores a crazy goal, or he's on a scoring streak, even though the team's on a losing streak. Like, there's still ways to keep like that. That keeps us engaged. So it's going to be keeping our fans engaged too. So just kind of celebrate the little victories with them and kind of stay in their conversation about what they're talking about.
Totally. That's really what stuck with me when I really became admiring of what you guys were doing with the Oilers and knew that you knew what you were doing as the director there, seeing the fact that, yeah, the team might not be winning as much as we want, but hey, this is still a sick toe drag that any fan can appreciate and can enjoy watching. And you know, that kind of stuff never gets stale, for sure. I did want to shift briefly with the few minutes we have left talking to the director of digital, director of social media for the Oilers Entertainment Group, Edmonton Oilers NHL Club. Tell me a little about how really you guys have made social and almost yourself as a nice way to bring in fans and having that content that really is social media focused. I mean, I love the social, I don't know how to pronounce it, the content that really is a nice, hybrid of content that is very much echoing social media as well as original content in and of itself. So I guess, tell me about where that, not I don't want to call it a campaign, but that strategy came from and how you guys are executing it now.
Yeah, I mean, all the while I've been, you share fan content and reply to fans that post great photos and really, really like fun, engaging messages. We've always kind of endorsed that and rewarded fans that engage with us. And so doing a weekly social media blog called Social Oil Media and putting that on EdmontonOilers.com is just kind of a way to kind of put it in one place and give fans a weekly look into the social media world. And our web guys love it because it's another piece of content, especially all through the summer. Every Saturday we know we're going to have a new piece of content that's engaging for fans. So I just try to put together any kind of campaigns and contests we have going on that fans might not have seen otherwise if they're just seeing it on our website that way, and an opportunity to showcase some of our best fan tweets, fan photos from the past week. Just kind of another way to complement all the stuff that we're already doing on our channels, but to integrate that with our website too, and mm-hmm. just get more eyes on our website, and they'll probably go to other pieces of content that our other producers have done. So it's just kind of sharing the wealth and spreading it around and really fostering that passion that our fans have.
Yeah, and you guys are really creating so much content on social, and there is so much UGC going on out there as well. And to think that not everyone's going to see every tweet, not everyone is following you guys on Snapchat, but especially the older fans, you know, they might only go to the website, and to be able to expose them to that awesome content, that awesome conversations that are happening on social is really a great, valuable thing you guys do for them, and gives them a reason to come to the website as well.
Yeah, just knowing that their voice is being heard, that we value them as a fan. That's mm-hmm. so important for me to provide that one-to-one engagement with them and kind of validate their fanship.
Oh, I love that. I want to have listeners listen to that again and again. I mean, just the acknowledgement that they are being heard. That is really such a valuable piece of insight for anyone in social, and especially in social and sports when we're dealing with sports fans. So let's finish up briefly here with obviously the season is right around the corner. We're into the preseason now. So what has this preseason been like? I mean, what are the training camp tasks to complete? Are you guys creating GIFs to use when a goal is scored? Are you guys getting players to do some evergreen content? Are you doing some player profiles? What is sort of the game plan to make sure you get as much content as you can while the guys are in front of a green screen or going through their media day activities?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this preseason has been like none other that I've ever been a part of, because we did open our brand new arena, Rogers Place, in September. So coupling that excitement and content and all these different events and concerts that have come through, and kind of merging that with the start of the hockey season, has kind of been the theme of the last, call it, 5 or 6 weeks here. So a lot of just working the players into our various milestones, like to have Connor and a few other guys have the first skate on the Rogers Place ice, and then just something different every day with them doing their first thing at Rogers Place, whether it was the first preseason goal scored, first preseason game, and then obviously we'll have some huge milestones when the actual season starts going. So it's been a lot about, very much about the building and kind of making sure we put our stamp on history of all the different milestones that you go through, like, because you only do it once. You want to do stuff that people are going to remember. So whether it was like the ice going in over the summer, anything that really combined the hockey part and the building part, we found had just massive engagement on both our Rogers Place channels and our Oilers channels. It's created that much more excitement about the season on top of the new players and all the excitement that usually comes with a new hockey season.
And from a day-to-day perspective too, are you guys building up your graphic templates and what those are going to look like for an intermission score update or a final score update or whatever it may be? Or is that stuff more created on the fly once the season gets going?
Kind of a combination. I mean, there's some stuff you can anticipate doing, but other stuff it's like you really have to roll with the punches if something crazy happens, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, definitely a lot of prep on that end. We have a really, really awesome graphics department. And you mentioned GIFs. We actually freelance out our GIF creation on a game-by-game basis to Stephanie Vale. She's...
Oh, wow. Yeah, she's fantastic.
Yeah. One of our video producers actually recommended that we reach out to her and see if maybe there is a relationship we could start there. So, we hired her last year, and she's amazing. Like, she's probably the best at what she does and kind of that content creation. So rather than us try to add that on top of our nightly game duties, we have her there turning around stuff so quick for us, and she does like the slow motion and the all that kind of little effects that you can do with them just right, and been a very valuable part of our content creation. So we're very lucky to be working with her, and it's just really supplemented all the other stuff we do.
And for listeners who don't know Stephanie, they may know her Twitter handle.
Yes.
My regular face just has been an incredible asset to the hockey community with GIFs. Before GIFs were even that big, GIFing replays and highlights and such, and she's been great for several years now. Does the ML BAM integration, does that enhance or change what you guys do? Or are they going to be providing highlights and real-time content for you guys? Or is that still kind of a learning process for you, how that's going to end up playing out?
I think that's the end goal. I mean, they just switched over all of the club websites and video players, so I think that's kind of a big undertaking that they're still like working through getting all that running at the top speed. But I think there's a lot of exciting things coming in that relationship in terms of the content that we'll be able to put out. Like, I mean, you look at the well-oiled machine that MLBAM proper is with the baseball side, and so many awesome things that they do at a digital and social level there that we'll be working towards on the NHL side. So really exciting things to come on that front.
Well-oiled machine. I see what you did there, Ryan. I see what you did.
You know, those references are just kind of second nature, I think, in my at this point.
Oh man, we have so much more to talk about. I didn't even get through all my notes here, but we'll have a little more fun with Ryan coming up in our Around the Rink with Ryan segment. But first, you have this episode's shareable stat, and it's coming at you right now. Really enjoyed talking to Ryan, Director of Social Media for the Oilers Entertainment Group. We're going to get to know Ryan a little bit more and hear some more great stories in our Around the Rink with Ryan segment coming at you in just a moment. But first, we have this episode's shareable stat. And this episode's shareable stat is all about social platforms and young teens. So young adults, I guess, in the 18 to 20 range is where this data comes from. And it is that, and the number is 58%. That is the percentage of those surveyed in the 18 to 20-year-old range who said they watch video primarily on Facebook or on YouTube. 58%. The next one down was Snapchat at 50%, and then followed quite a bit behind by Instagram and Twitter. Twitter's all the way down at 24%. So Facebook and YouTube, and then Snapchat at 50%. But 58% is the number of both Facebook and YouTube. So obviously it goes without saying, we know video is king on Facebook right now. Live video still seems to be getting a nice little organic boost in the news feed, and fans seem to be to continue to enjoy it, partly because of the great video content that folks are putting out there, especially sports teams. But YouTube as well is a big player to not forget about. You see a lot of social media call-outs on websites and just in general saying, you know, follow us on the big four, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat now. And YouTube is becoming an afterthought. You know, yes, it might be a repository for all your video content just so people can stumble upon it. But there's an audience there that's spending a lot of time on YouTube. It's a younger audience. It's an audience that's used to watching a lot of video, long-form video. And spending a lot of time there on their mobile device, and even now at home as well on their set-tops. YouTube is a place where fans are spending time, and it's also still, yes, the one of the largest search engines out there as well. So make sure you have some good keywords, and are putting a lot out on YouTube from a volume perspective. You know, build up subscribers if you want to try that route, but ultimately, if you put people forth toward YouTube, it is a user-friendly platform, and they're willing to sit back, kick up their feet, and watch a long video on your channel, or watch a couple of videos. So give it a shot. Make sure you're minding your YouTube channel, because fans are out there and they're consuming on that platform. So that's this episode's shareable stat. 58%. That is both the number of folks in the 18 to 20-year-old range that said they primarily watch video on Facebook, as well as the percentage that said they watch their video content on YouTube. Think about it, ponder it, take some action on it, and come back right with us in just a second as I talk more with Ryan Frankson in the Around the Rink with Ryan segment. All right, we're back. That was this episode's shareable stat, and now we have more with Ryan Frankson, Director of Social Media for the Oilers Entertainment Group. You nailed your main interview, Ryan. Are you now ready to go around the rink with Ryan?
Rapid fire, let's do it.
Hell yeah, now you're at a new rink now, the new Rogers Center, so I don't know what that means, but hopefully it means we'll have some fun here. So number one for you, this is always a fun question to ask. Tell me your favorite social media campaign that you've been a part of with the Oilers over the years.
I think some of the ones that we've done a couple years that have been a lot of fun would be the ESPN NHL cover vote campaigns, because those kind of happen shortly after the season ends, so it's a little bit... You definitely have more real estate on your channels to work with rather than game practice, game stuff. So we've had, I think in the past, there was a Jordan Eberle, he was in the running to be on the cover, and another was Taylor Hall. So working with our video department to create some kind of lighter, funny videos that we didn't really get a chance to do kind of the lighter stuff during the hockey season, because it's kind of all about the games and whatnot. Just to have a little bit more fun with something like that as part of the cover vote. And then maybe on the flip side, a little bit more like serious and powerful is the annual Hockey Fights Cancer campaign that I believe is, it's league-wide. I know the Hockey Talks mental health awareness is just the Canadian teams, I think, but Hockey Fights Cancer is across the league. So to each year we usually have a one game night where we have like a toque fundraiser. I think you guys call them beanies down there, but we call them toques up here. where we'll have like a Hockey Fights Cancer toque and some of you who've done mittens and scarves. But that's kind of like an in-game fundraiser. But leading up to that, to kind of reach our full fan base and give away a couple of these cool items, we've had fans share like their cancer story, like what Hockey Fights Cancer means to them. So just to see that the power of that campaign hit so many different people, and for them to kind of all be under the same theme and topic and kind of sharing that stuff under that hockey banner, to kind of, it's just really powerful stuff that I take a lot of pride in kind of facilitating and being part of that conversation.
Definitely. I really love all the cause related stuff that hockey does, from everything from Hockey Fights Cancer to the Bell Let's Talk campaign to Movember every year. I mean, they really do a great job, and it's fun too. It's fun for fans, and it's ultimately for a good cause.
Absolutely. All
right, number two for you. I know, you know, having lived through this myself as well, there was a lot to, I guess, learn and just take away from the NHL lockout back in 2012, when, you know, we couldn't really talk about anything hockey related except for your minor league players. And even then, if you posted anything, even about a CR event, fans would tend to go off with profanity, let alone being able to follow NHL podium or the podium on Twitter. So a long way of saying, I guess, what was your biggest takeaway, your biggest lesson as a social media manager during that NHL lockout?
Well, I think we were pretty lucky. If you recall, we had a bunch of those young guns who were still on entry-level deals. Mm-hmm. So they actually got to go down and play for our AHL team, which was in Oklahoma City at the time. It's in Bakersfield now. But so we had Taylor Hall down there. We had Jordan Eberle. We had Ryan Nugent Hopkins and Justin Schultz, who were all playing for our AHL team. So we covered it like the Oilers were still playing, mm-hmm. but it was the Barons. Like we had two of our digital team members move to Oklahoma for 3 months to cover the team. I wasn't one of them, but we would cover it like the Oilers were playing. So we didn't really change our strategy too much. I was actually helping back out with the Oil Kings during the lockout, because mm-hmm. we had a bit of staff secondment during that time. Some of our staff got to go work at a couple of different companies in Edmonton to kind of loan them our services while the work stoppage was happening. And my secondment just happened to be helping out with the Oil Kings as well, doing some more digital and community relations stuff with them. So I don't know how many really lessons I have to share from during the NHL lockout, because it was a lot of business as usual for me.
Yeah, you guys were lucky.
Yeah. But fortunately we haven't had to go through that again, and hopefully we never do. But
Do you remember where you were when it finally ended?
You know what? It's funny you say that. I'm actually over at my mom and dad-in-law's house, mm-hmm. and my fiance at the time and I were actually living there. We were between houses, and I'm actually in the bedroom where I was that morning, where I woke up and to the news that the lockout was over. So it's really funny that we're talking about that right now.
Wow. Yeah. I remember sitting there refreshing Twitter every second, waiting for that official news to come out. That was a fun, interesting time for sure. All right, number three for you, Ryan. You know, you can take this briefly or go along with it however you want. Tell me what's a day in the life like for you on an average home game day? So let's not – maybe not home opener, but just another day in the season for a home game for the Oilers.
Yeah, absolutely. First thing in the morning, call it like 8:30, 9 o'clock-ish. I'll kind of put out the – I'll plug our game preview as it stands. Mm-hmm. At that point, we haven't had our morning skate yet, so there's not a lot of lineup info or whatnot, but mm-hmm. putting out the broadcast info, game time, if we still have tickets available for that game, put out that info kind of first thing in the morning to really set the tone for the day, and everything will kind of build from that. Mm-hmm. And then usually do that from home, and then hop in the car and drive to the rink for 10 o'clock for our morning skate. Mm-hmm. And during the morning skate, if we have any guys that maybe missed practice the day before, if they're back out there, that'll be one of the first things that we'll post about, just to let our fans know that so-and-so is clearly healthy and ready to skate, or maybe he's wearing a non-contact jersey or something like that, and he's not ready to play yet. And from there, that'll filter into how the forward lines and D pairings are looking for that night. If there's been any big changes to the lineup that our fans want to know about, and then whichever goalie comes off first is typically the one starting that night. So we let let everyone know who's going to be starting. It's funny. It's always kind of a race for the media to who can tweet it out first. Really silly, but just one of the funny things that you have happens on the game day. Then head into the locker room and put out some quotes and photos from the guys, key guys from that game. Maybe a guy's playing against his old team, so we'll focus on him. Typically, we live stream our coaches' press conference after the morning skate. And new this year, we've been able to integrate our live stream. Last couple of years, it's been website and our YouTube channel, and now we've been able to integrate Facebook Live with that, which has been so amazing for engagement because so many people are watching stuff on Facebook Live, and Facebook does such a great job of featuring that content on people's home feeds and notifications. So we're looking forward to having some big numbers on our live broadcast this year. And so after all those post-skate avails are done, be into actually posting that polished content, the raw videos, our pregame video pack, the actual morning skate report. So the next couple hours are pretty much full of that that produced content, putting it out on our channels. Hopefully squeeze in some lunch in there at some point. It's usually pretty rushed on those days. And then usually the afternoon I dedicate to kind of addressing any sponsorship campaigns, contests we have going on. That's typically when I post about them. And then afternoon, kind of that lull before the game ramps up again. And then, yeah, pregame meal usually around, if we're starting at 7 o'clock local time, probably eat around 5, 5.15. Kind of serves as like a pregame meeting for our digital staff. We kind of talk about anything that might be going on that night, anything special. And then head up to the press box around 6-ish. And if there's any kind of, I guess, like pregame messaging that or pregame contest that we were our fans in bowl are participating in, we kind of talk about them at that point. And then into warm-up where we kind of live snap that. And in some cases, we've live streamed warm-up for some of the big games. Just trying to toe the line outside the broadcast window. I think we can broadcast like the first 10 minutes of warm-up without entering that 30-minute window before puck drop. And then, yeah, any lineup changes that happen between that time. And usually put out the starting lineup and then kind of right into game action where live tweeting everything, video highlights, GIF highlights. And then, yeah, game ends. Kind of the same routine as after morning skate, right into we live stream our post game in the locker room and the coach. Also be obviously live tweeting and posting on all of our channels. And then usually at the rink till about midnight when everything's up and posted, and then head home.
Jeez, and then pass out.
Yep, definitely pass out hard. And then typically they don't practice until 11 the next day, so it's a little bit more of an easier go the next day, fortunately. But yeah,
and fun time. Then you do it 70 more times, or I guess for home games another 30, 35 times. That's the life, including preseason too, of course, and postseason this year.
Road games aren't that much different in terms of the flow. If I'm there, it's very much the same. And if I'm covering it from home, just a lot of working with the guys who are there.
So do you travel with to a handful of the games? Are you in the majority of them?
Close to half, I'd say. We have three spots for digital media on all of our road trips. So, we're pretty lucky on that front. So we always have a video producer there. And then we always have an on-camera reporter. And usually it is a guy by the name of Tom Gazzola. He's our go-to guy for on-camera, but if he's got that road trip off, our head writer will switch into be the on-camera guy who will host our panels and do interviews. And then if I'm there, I'm doing social, and I'm doing a little bit of writing for our website. And so we have kind of like six or seven guys who rotate through those three spots over the course of the year. So I get to go on between 40 and 50% of the road trips, which is pretty nice. It's a good balance. I don't know if I'd want to be on all of them because that'd be pretty taxing. I don't know how some of those guys do it, like our broadcasters, but they've been doing it for a long time, so they got their routines down, but I appreciate the home time too.
Oh, I bet. We're having a question coming up about the traveling in just a minute. But first, number four, tell me the best locker room personality or the best quote over the years on the Oilers, and also the best guy in the room now.
Yeah, definitely. Historically speaking, over the last few years that I've been in the room, I think the funniest guy was Andy Sutton.
Great guy.
Big D-man, real bruiser out on the ice, and just the best, like, straight-faced deadpan humor when he's in a scrum. Really enjoyed having him around. He would really bust the chops of the different reporters who were in there, and really didn't take it too seriously, which was great. And I think right now one of the best guys for a post-practice, post-game quote is Pat Maroon. He really shoots from the hip. Doesn't really mask how he's feeling about how the team's playing. If it's great, he's raving. If it's not great, he's definitely taking full, like, taking onus for himself and his teammates, and really just kind of not hiding it. He really calls it how he sees it. And that was really something that you noticed right when he came to the team. Like, he explained what he saw, what he liked, what he didn't like, what he hoped that the team could change. And it was really, really cool to see him be so honest like that. And he's a really funny guy too.
Yeah, he has a great story too. He's really been a persistent player over the years, and it's good to see him sticking in the NHL now for the long haul, it seems like.
Yeah, we're going to dive into it a bit later this year with some in-depth stuff. But him coming from St. Louis, like, minor hockey, and, like, a little bit that it's getting more and more notoriety these days as a growing hockey market. So that's really cool that he came out of there.
Oh, something for us to watch for sure. Yeah. My number five for you, going back to your sporadic travels, tell me your favorite American city and why. When I say American, I mean United States, of course.
Yeah, that's tough because I love different aspects of different cities so much. Chicago is super cool. The rink, obviously, the fans are amazing there. The national anthem, to be in that building and in the press box for the anthem is something special. It's a beautiful city too, beautiful downtown. It's kind of like it kind of combines like that big city life, but it's kind of like Midwest charm too. So I love going to Chicago for that. I love New York, obviously. I'm a big New York Yankees fan, and just love everything about that city, the busyness of Manhattan. And then I'll toss one more in there, which would be Nashville, which is just an amazing, nice, fun city. The All-Star game was there this past year, which was just a great time to have basically everyone from the league there in one spot. Mm-hmm. Just being able to see all those people in that really fun city. Being a big country music fan too, it's just like the combination of a lot of my favorite things all rolled into one.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, you really get to see a lot of the country traveling along with the Oilers, even though you're super busy all the time too when you're traveling.
Yeah.
Number six for you, Ryan. Tell me, we talked a lot about Connor McDavid, you know, the next coming of Wayne Gretzky or Sidney Crosby, or whatever name you want to use. So tell us your best Connor McDavid story. It can be any sort of story, something that really stands out, a wow moment, or anything that really that sticks in your mind.
I think the funny thing about Connor is he's actually pretty goofy, and you might not see it in his interviews and all the stuff that you would see on just that stuff. But I think he's actually a pretty goofy guy, and it comes out a bit. He actually did these funny commercials with this full size penguin. It was actually for a bank here in Canada, where he's got these he's like fishing with this penguin. They're playing like Xbox or PlayStation, like NHL, and you can kind of see his personality coming out in it, a little bit more playful, goofy, chirping back and forth with this silly penguin. And his brother's actually in one or two of them too. So really, to see his kind of goofy personality that you might not see in interviews, that's kind of my favorite part of Connor, watching him kind of grow and be involved in the team here.
Oh, that's awesome! Now I'm pretty much just picturing like the penguin from Billy Madison playing a video game next.
He looks a lot like that penguin too, so you're not too far off.
But, oh, that's great!
Yeah, looked it up. His name is Percy the Penguin. So if you look probably like Percy the Penguin and Connor McDavid, you could watch them, and they're pretty good.
Oh, you'll definitely have to link that up. All right, number seven for you, Ryan. Tell me your number one tip for a social media and sports pro. It can be any sort of tip that you think will be helpful.
I think we touched on it a bit earlier. It's kind of about that really being in tune with what your fans are talking about, what they're really jiving with. Like, I always say I want to be speaking with our fan base as opposed to at them all the time. I want to talk. I'm not like trying to imitate them or mimic them, but I want to kind of try to be one of them and cheer the way that they're cheering for certain players, kind of use the nicknames that they've really latched on to. And yeah, just kind of immersing myself in their world as much as I can, as opposed to just being a one-way conversation, just talking at them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just kind of use their language as much as I can while still keeping in mind that this is the team speaking and still kind of staying true to your brand, but being casual and authentic and just, yeah, speaking with them rather than at them.
I love that. That's really well put, and something that I've taken to heart over the years as well myself is echoing how the fans are speaking and yeah, really, being part of that community while also having that leadership role as well, and really keep your finger on the pulse of what they are talking about. And no one in the organization, I'm sure, knows more about what fans are discussing and what means most to them than you. You're on the front. You're in the trenches every single day. That's
absolutely
great. All right, number 8 for you, Ryan. We always like to talk about food a little bit on the podcast, so I have to know when I visit you in Edmonton one of these days, what is the best food to get in Edmonton?
You know what? Edmonton is part of a region of Alberta, which is our province, that is very, very large Ukrainian descendants.
Yeah.
So the pierogies in our region are very delicious and very authentic Ukrainian. Kind of the northern Alberta is definitely very much Ukrainian country. And for some reason, Edmonton is so passionate and kind of famous for their green onion cakes. Definitely kind of an Asian-inspired dish, but for some reason, Edmontonians just love them, and you can get them everywhere in Edmonton.
Wow, I would never have guessed that for sure, but now I know pierogies and green onion cakes. That's definitely eclectic for sure. That sounds interesting.
one of the bars actually made a green onion cake burger this past summer.
Oh, wow. That sounds really different, really interesting. What did you try? Was it good?
I haven't had it yet, but I really want to.
Nice. Well, you have to let us know when you do. We'll be watching on Instagram or on Twitter.
I'll definitely about it.
Last one for you, and I kind of know the answer, so I might need you to say other teams as well. Besides the Oilers winning the Cup, which pro team would you most want to win a championship?
Well, you say that because you know I'm going to say the Yankees, but I've been so blessed to see them win a few titles.
Including over my Padres here in 98. Oh, gosh.
That is true, yeah. Like, I mean, that, like, 10-year-old me, that's right when Derek Jeter started playing in 95, 96. All those, the core four were there, and that just kind of made me a Yankees fan, just how great those players were, and just kind of watching their whole careers over the course of my life. So I like to say that I was a fan right from the beginning of that era, when anyone tries to chirp me for being a bandwagoner or anything like that. But in answer to your question then, that's a really tough one. I would really love to see the Toronto Raptors win a championship. Being the only Canadian NBA team now, I think the whole country kind of rallies around them.
Definitely.
You could say that about the Blue Jays too, especially right now, but I can't personally say that because they're a huge division rival.
Right.
And I've become a big Minnesota Vikings fan over the past couple of years too, so I'd love to see them do well, and I think they're trending in that direction right now, being undefeated. So.
Not bad. Well, you got a good shot with most of those teams. The Yankees, this obviously wasn't their year this year, but every once in a while they can't win the title every single year.
Yeah.
I love it. All right, Ryan, you survived going around the rink with Ryan. Now it's your chance to take over the podcast and tell us your social media all-star to follow. Are you someone on Twitter or Instagram or Snapchat, whatever they are, a blogger, and who they are and why they're worth following?
I can do a couple, right?
Totally. It's your time.
Okay, well, I mentioned Stephanie at my regular face. She's awesome. The GIF queen, as we call her. And I think somebody that you interact with a lot too would be Jessica Smith.
Mm-hmm.
at War Jesse Eagle. She talks, much like you do, talks a lot about social media and sports biz, and just a really good follow. There's always a lot of good conversation going on with her, and I engage with her a lot, and I always see her talking with other social media managers for different teams. Another really good follow. I have to give a shout out to PD Beats up here in Canada. He's you would know him as well. Yeah, he also does a podcast. I think it's kind of on hiatus right now, but I think he's bringing it back pretty soon, hopefully.
Yeah, the Pop Turner podcast for folks who want to check it out. He has a bunch of great episodes on there, including one with Ryan here.
Exactly. So he's at PD Beats, And then I have to give a shout out to Scott Kegley. I mentioned the Vikings.
Mm-hmm.
He's their head honcho for all things digital, and he does really great work. He came from the 49ers, and I had the pleasure of meeting him and seeing their brand new stadium a couple years ago. And the Vikings recruited him to come over and help them open up their new stadium. So I've kind of followed Scott's career and tried to use him as kind of a little bit of mentorship and see some of the things that they're doing there and try to emulate some of that in our market. And I believe Scott's Twitter is just at Scott Kegley as well. Mm-hmm. So real, real easy people to follow.
All very good follows. I'm following all of them already, so I'm good there. But I definitely recommend everyone else listening check those out as well. And how about yourself? Where can we find you as well as the Oilers and all things digital and social?
Very, very easy. My Twitter is at Ryan Frankson. I'm on Instagram too, private, but I'd probably accept you. And then all the Oilers accounts are Edmonton Oilers, all spelled out, except for our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/oilers.nhl. But yeah, Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, all at Edmonton Oilers.
Very nice.
Yeah, all of our Rogers Place channels are also just Rogers Place. So Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and Snapchat.
Quite a few properties that you get to oversee there with Oilers Entertainment Group. And it's just been so good picking your brain today, getting to know you, having a little fun with you, hearing some stories. I mean, you really are on the ball with everything you're doing, or on the puck, so to speak. And it's just been a pleasure being able to speak to you, especially at this busy time of year for you guys. And I appreciate you coming on the podcast.
Oh, my pleasure as well. I love talking about this stuff. I'm sure I could do it for hours upon hours, but you got other guests to get to, I'm sure.
We'll have to have you back after after Connor and the Oilers raise the cup this year, right?
That would be amazing.
Beauty. Thanks a lot, man. Best of luck this season.
Thank you.
Thank you so much again to Ryan Frankson, Director of Social Media for the Oilers Entertainment Group. Really enjoyed hearing some of those stories. I learned a lot from him. Someone that definitely continue to watch everything they do from here on out, and including their cool new venue, the Rogers Place, opening up this season. And hockey season is here, so now it's time to open up your eyes and see all the great stuff that goes on in the NHL. A lot of good social media happening there. They do a great job at both the league level and the club level, and Ryan is very much a part of that. So thanks again to Ryan, and thank you for listening to the podcast today. As always, I'm your host, Neil Horwitz. Find more information and other episodes at dsmsports.net, and I'll see you on Twitter at NJH287. Until next time, thanks for listening to the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast.